You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders, for coders, about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beej, the optimistic newbie developer. Happy New Year, y'all. Welcome to another episode of Complete Developer Podcast. This week, we're talking about 12 habits that you should consider taking on, stopping, or changing in the next year. We'll start with a brief discussion about habit formation, and then give you one new habit to form each month of the year. But before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
I have been dealing with making expression trees work in Delphi, which has given me a very thorough head-first collision with the type system in Delphi and all the interesting bits. A few days ago, I actually had to dive down into some assembler to actually see what was going on, and I'm really grateful that I was able to do that. But I never really thought that I would be using that class this much this far into my career.
If you guys follow me on social media, remember back to when we recorded this, because I posted a photo of Will showing me.
Yeah, I was kind of doing pseudocode explaining something unique and interesting that I found that really made my face hurt for most of the day, but I got it figured out. I'm having a pretty good time. I'm also playing with .NET Core on Linux and with Lazarus, which is the free Pascal. So trying to get, you just want to have a test environment to dink around with, because, you know, hey, I can. And that's pretty much the extent of it. And that's what I've been doing. So how about you?
Well, I have been fighting form data. Up until just last week, I only really worked with JSON, but I had to write a custom controller in an app at work to receive form data, because we've been using Web API in our mid-tier, and I had to write an MVC controller. And so that was interesting, because it kind of involved thinking about the problem differently. Also, I know I've spoken about fighting with JavaScript promises. Probably the last few episodes was when I talked about it. But today, one of my coworkers was dealing with the promises in a for each loop and having trouble. And then he found this really great article on some of the common errors with JavaScript promises. So I'm going to post that in our show notes, because it has not just dealing with for each loops, but quite a few other things that people might find useful. I know I read through it twice already, and that was just from this afternoon, because it had a lot of good stuff in it. But that said, let's go ahead and roll the music. So this week I have something that might help you guys out, especially if you got some smart home equipment for Christmas. This is the Cujo. It's a smart firewall for the smart home. It basically provides security for your IoT devices. It collects your local network traffic and stores the data in the cloud. Then it analyzes the usage data. It'll even notify you of anything suspicious on your network. It's kind of cool, and of course, there will be a link in the show notes. So who's talking to us this week?
This week, we have a tweet from Henrique Lopez. At Complete Dev Pod, hello from Florida. Love the podcast and am learning a lot as I'm new in the dev world. The numbers episode was especially eye-opening.
Thank you, Henrique. We really appreciate the comment and are glad you're enjoying the show. I know I've learned a lot just by doing it.
You know, and we've got other episodes similar to that one coming up, and there's been some stuff that I've had to learn.
It's a lot of fun. We've got some Complete Developer swag just for you. Send us a DM on Twitter, and we'll get that out to you. Guys, if you'd like some Complete Developer swag, leave us a review in iTunes or comment on the website. I do want to mention, we know that there is an issue with some of the comments appearing on the website. So if you have any issues with that, contact us on any of our social media. We post all our episodes to Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+, Path, and Tumblr. So habit formation. Well, how long does it take to create a new habit?
Well, I've heard a bunch of different takes on this. Anything from like 3 weeks to about 30 days seems to be, you know, roughly the range of them. Pretty much have to practice something continually that long for it to actually stick where you do it automatically. That's a pretty good size time commitment. I think that's probably something to bring in, you know, up front is like you really do need to be committed to what you're trying to do in order to do it.
The format for this episode is a little bit interesting. Will wrote the outline and
with beer.
Yes. Well, yeah, I can tell. It appears more like one of my outlines, to be honest with you, because mine tend to be more gimmicky than yours do.
Yeah.
But he wrote it out for a different habit each month. Why would you want to revisit your habits at the beginning of the year?
Well, I mean, the big thing is a lot of times you have habits that don't serve you, or you need to develop new habits to, you know, reach a goal. And actually consciously evaluating that is a little bit smarter than just letting things happen. And really that's kind of what we're getting into, you know, why we're suggesting this, you know, one a month is you have one thing to work on, and each of these things, or most of these things, are things that are kind of based around not doing stuff by default, but actually consciously taking control of your situation.
From a behavioral standpoint, like behavioral psychology standpoint, this makes a lot of sense, because what you want to do is, instead of trying to break a habit or stop doing something, you replace it. Or instead of trying to start doing something good, replace something.
Right. And I mean, the bigger thing too is, you know, one of the reasons I suggested just one a month, and you don't have to do all of them anyway, but, you know, do one thing at a time. And the reason is if you find that, oh, hey, I've changed four habits this month and I'm miserable, guess what? You don't necessarily know which one is really causing it.
Well, that's a very good point.
It could be the confluence of those things.
No, or it could be one specific one, but you don't know which one of those four.
Right. And it's a lot harder to introspect on it and to improve your habits as a result of that. Plus, it's just, you know, it's kind of crazy to try to do that, to try to fix like four or five things at once. I mean, that's just hard. And if you fail, you're going to fail at all of them. So it's putting all the eggs in one basket and then, you know, juggling or something. It's just not a good idea.
Yeah. And there's a lot of really great resources out there. And we're going to mention a few on the show and include them in the show notes.
Yeah. And I didn't want to get into too much on the resources on habit formation, because there's so much stuff on Lifehacker and some of those other places on that. Like you can pick one, and if you are disciplined, it's probably going to work.
All right. So jumping right in with the upcoming month, January, cut out casual media consumption. And by that, we don't mean podcasts, because this is not casual.
That's right. This is work related.
Exactly.
Do it on the clock. That's the plan, boys.
Now, and seriously, though, this doesn't mean stop watching TV, reading books, playing games, whatever. Stop doing it by default. Especially when it doesn't add anything to your day or may even make you feel worse.
Yeah. I mean, my wife has noticed this about me, that when I'm in a kind of a downturn, she's like, you play video games a lot when you're not doing well, like mentally, like as far as your depression or whatever is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because that tends to be the default. I'll go and I'll sit and I'll play video games to kill time because I don't feel like doing anything else.
Well, I know I've mentioned before, I have a comfort TV show.
Yes, you do.
Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And it's one of those shows that it doesn't matter how I'm feeling. If I'm feeling terrible, horrible, whatever, angry, sad, grumpy, whatever, I can watch that, and an episode or two in, I'm feeling better.
Yeah, well, I mean,
and that wouldn't be, that's not what we're talking about with casual TV.
Well, yeah, and it's more of a thing too. You're doing that with intentionality, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the difference between somebody that's an alcoholic that can't deal with their life, and so they go home and they drink, versus somebody that goes, hey, you know, I want to try that new beer.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then stops.
Mm-hmm. So the average American watches about 4.3 hours of TV a day.
Half of them watch more than that, give or take.
Yes. And a lot of them do it while they don't do the things they actually want to do with their life.
You and I have got several mutual friends who talk about all the big things they want to do with their life and how they don't have time to do them. And then you find out, you know, if you talk to them about TV shows, they're up on every new series that's going out.
Yeah.
Because they watched them all.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is incredibly sad. It's not even a thing of like personal judgment on the person, but it's like, dude, take control of your life. Like, don't do this.
you know, sometimes you just want like a mental break.
Yeah.
And again, that's...
You take it consciously.
Yeah.
You go, hey, I'm completely fried. I'm not going to do well at whatever else I'm trying to do. And I have completed, you know, what I'm at least some things I'm supposed to do today. Now I'll go watch TV versus, oh, I hate my life. I'm going to turn the TV on or turn the video game on or, you know, and this is true even of reading fiction, by the way, or, you know, just reading in general. Like, it's not as bad because it's a little bit more effort. And yeah. So, you know, people that tend to kill their time by reading tend to also do other things because it's not as far down the scale.
Well, you don't really veg out in front of a book as much as in TV. Because TV is pretty much passive entertainment.
Yeah.
But also think about what you're seeing on TV, what attitudes, worldviews it is putting into your head. I mean, TV is at least as bad as having a bad peer or two around.
Especially, I'll give you a couple of examples. My daughter was watching the Disney Channel. We're probably going to get rid of it. Because if you look on there, like the actual Disney, not Disney Junior, look at the way the parents get talked to by the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, they're idiots and the kids are lying to the parents and all that. Well, what does that do? It normalizes that behavior. And we go, okay, that's all well and good. I don't want my kids to watch that. But as an adult, you also have to bear in mind that, hey, what I'm watching normalizes that behavior. Right. It, you know, like it's the filter of the things that you see and it looks normal. And if you're watching people on TV that lie and they cheat and they steal and they, you know, they sleep around their spouse and they're just, you know, complete scumbag losers. If you watch enough of that, that's going to start looking a lot more normal than it really is versus pathological.
I know. I watch a lot of The Flash and running really fast is very normal to me now. I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well,
not about watching The Flash. I actually like that show, but it's true. And I mean, the same thing can be said about news media.
Yeah. Well, they normalize fear. I mean, that's what they're selling. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you go on and you turn on something it's really not entertainment. It's supposed to be the news, but what is it really? Like, you know, I forget which Kardashian's in the news and it really doesn't matter. But one of them will be in the news any given week doing something. And okay, how much bearing does this have on my life versus how much is this drawing my attention away from things that actually matter?
Also, a lot of TV watching can mess up your sleep. And, you know, we've said it already, but waste time that you need for other things.
Yeah, like basic hygiene or actually cooking healthy meals for yourself or socializing with your family or your kid. Or if you want to start a business and you're typing on your computer, watching the TV, you're not writing good code, writing good marketing copy.
It's
50-50. I mean, the big thing here is actually being intentional. And another thing, and this is something that I've run into as well, is television, especially in excess, will mask symptoms of depression. And, you know, and it's not really just television. It's other things too, you know, video games, books, whatever. It's a thing of, you know, cocooning and getting into this other world because the one you're in is not the way you want it to be. Like, it's one thing if it's like, hey, I want to go, you know, I want to go adventure in Narnia. That's one thing. It's another thing of going, I want to go to Narnia because my life sucks. Like, you need to figure out how to fix your life. And it doesn't always work, but, you know, sometimes at least, like, be aware of when you're using escape literature.
Mm-hmm. Moving right along to my favorite month of the year, February. Not because it's the shortest, because the best people are born in February.
Ah.
Fix your diet and exercise. 7 out of 10 Americans are obese, with all of the misery and expense that brings.
Yeah, along with early death.
Healthcare expenses accounted for 17%.
Yep, it's up to 17% of GDP right now. Wow. And it is growing. Now, what is that doing? It's crowding out everything else. You know, maintenance of roads, maintenance of bridges, defense, all these other things. Like, healthcare expenses are going crazy. Now, some of that's the boomers getting older.
Yeah.
But that isn't all of it. You know, there's a lot of monopolistic behavior and there's a lot of fraud and there's a lot of graft and there's a lot of janky stuff going on. But at the end of the day, if you're not healthy, you're in a situation where you're going to get pinched very soon because like the market can't sustain this. Our GDP growth is what, 3%, 4% a year? Healthcare costs go up by 17%, you know, or 17% of GDP right now. I mean, like it's growing faster than the curve. What happens with two growth curves, one of which is growing at a faster rate and is lower? At some point, it's either going to cap off or it's going to cross the other one. And, you know, Nashville, especially with us living here, you know, all the healthcare companies, Nashville's going to get hit very, very hard when whatever happens to the healthcare system happens. And I mean, that, like, that's coming. And I'm saving up money to buy land because it's going to be cheaper.
Well, it goes without saying that casual alcohol and carbohydrate consumption just by default are not helpful.
Yeah. And it's one thing if you go, you know, I mean, we're drinking beers right now. We're drinking a beer, recording a podcast, and we kind of do watch how much crap we take in because it's not healthy. And when you're doing it, you know, just de facto of, well, there's a McDonald's close to work, so I'm going to eat at McDonald's every day. You know, you're going to wreck your health. Like, take just some intentional control over the situation, and you'd be surprised just how much it improves just by doing that. As far as the health and exercise, one website I found to be pretty helpful is marksdailyapple.com. That's the guy that wrote the Primal Blueprint, and, like, gosh, I don't know, he's probably got like a dozen other books out right now with, you know, recipes, and but he gets into a lot of the, you know, how the biological processes work. So if you want to have a deep understanding of things, that's a really good place to go to start getting the things in your head so that when you're intentional about what you're eating, you make better choices. Like, you don't, you know, like 20% of the effort will get you 80% of the results. And this is all we're really suggesting for February is do the 20%. So for March, the task is start networking.
And you really want to watch your back on the 15th, though.
Yeah. Good old Ides of March. Yeah. Well, his problem was he didn't network very well, right? He had, yeah, he did shallow networking and he thought Brutus was his friend. You know, most people, you know, by default, you're only networked with people that your family or a few friends you met in college and the people you've worked with. That's fine, but it also doesn't put you ahead of anybody else. And, you know, the fundamental thing to remember here is that life is not fair. So get ahead.
You know, intentional networking will help you find contacts. You'll be able to meet them on your own terms.
Right. Like, you won't be known as that guy that's, oh, hey, he's kind of good with computers, but I really don't know what he does. But, you know, a programmer is totally the same as a network engineer. And so, like, he can help you wire your house. Like, you don't want to meet people in those terms. You want to meet people in the terms of, I have something valuable and I'm coming in at that value level, because that first impression is so important.
You know, one of the things that I could highly suggest for networking would be going to user groups or find a group like the Code Newbies meetups.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, shameless plug for the one that we do here in Nashville. But Will and I, we run that one, and we've had, you know, we've made a lot of friends with new developers. I know when we were looking for someone with design experience who was learning to be a developer, it was someone out of that group. I'm like, I know the perfect person to suggest. She now works with me.
Yeah. And if you've established your credentials with people, like, they'll find stuff for you.
Yeah.
Even when you're not necessarily asking. And, you know, like, it's the most effective passive way to get job opportunities. You know, why not take the time and actually do that and do it appropriately? And one thing that may help as well is to make sure you do this before you're out of work.
Yeah.
Or before you're afraid of getting out of work, because fear hangs around you and it does not put you in as good of a position. Like, your confidence level isn't going to be the same. You're not going to carry yourself the same as if you have a full-time job and you're not going anywhere and you're comfortable. Like, do these things while you're comfortable everywhere else. That way, if you are not comfortable with networking, at least you don't have 50 other things piling on top of it.
Well, yeah, do this when it's not what you have to do, because, like, we both go to the .NET user group, not as often as either of us would like, but we do go on occasion. And at the end of every meeting, they have anybody that, you know, their company is hiring or they're looking, whatever, stand up. Well, let's say you've been going for a year while you had a job, did some networking, met some people, your company downsizes. You're looking for a job, you go in. Guess who's interviewing you? People that you know from your user group meeting. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen every time, but there's a good possibility of that happening.
Yeah. And, you know, small shifts in probability produce great changes in results.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you're a little bit nervous about the whole networking thing and actually being able to talk to people, because there's a lot of people in tech that, like, this is a common problem. There's a series called How to Talk to Anyone by Leo Lodes, which is actually quite good. I kind of built some of that stuff into my repertoire, among other things.
I want to read it just because that's not an issue I have. My mom has said ever since I learned to talk, I could talk to a fence post.
Yeah. Well, and that's how I got that way, was that and a few other things. But, I mean, you know, that helps.
Yeah, talking to you is like talking to a fence post.
Yeah. So, for April, start getting your finances in order. Like,
well, this is perfect for tax month.
Yes. And, I mean, that's why I brought it up for April. The fact is, most of your life goals are going to require money. Like, that's just the way it is. Like, you go, hey, I want to have kids someday. Guess what? It's going to require a lot of money. Yeah. If you want to go on vacation, you want to do something, you want to start a business, you want to whatever, money's going to be required. The other thing is when you're close to things starting to work out, sudden disruptions in your finances because you didn't adequately plan can completely derail whatever you've been working on.
Mm-hmm.
And so get control of this.
Yeah. Like, you want to go to a conference that your friend is putting on up in New York. That's her very first conference, called Codeland Conference.
I wondered how you're going to sneak that in there.
Yeah. Our friend Saran over at Code Newbies is putting on a conference up in New York in April, and I'm saving up to be able to go up to it. Yeah, this is something that is important because, you know, you've got to make decisions, you know, like, do I have the money to go out to eat or do I need to save it?
And yeah. If you don't have your finances in order, your decisions are going to be bad, especially when you have poor information.
Exactly.
You know, about like what you owe, like in taxes and those kind of things. It makes everything much harder. And you know, the other thing you need to do too is start getting some of your money management in place and automated. And I haven't done a very good job of this myself. This is something I've got to work on a little bit more. You know, things like putting money back for retirement, taking appropriate deductions, which I do. I take, you know, as many deductions as I can possibly get. Make those things routine tasks and get your workflow in place so that when you have to do it, it's not scrambling around for papers. It's like, okay, this is how I do this. Boom, it's done. And then I don't have to worry about it, because that cuts down on the amount of that, like, that clingy tension you feel when you're having to deal with financial matters. It's like, oh yeah, this is easy. I've got all this stuff laid out. There's a process and I do the thing and it's done.
Yeah. And
it's organized.
Since you're already thinking about your finances because it's tax month, you know,
yeah,
this is a great time to just sit down and go, all right, I'm going to plan out. And don't you usually plan out your year around this time?
Yeah. And there's reasons that I think we've gone into in a previous episode why I do that. But mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very big thing for me.
If you are in debt or are struggling with your finances, Dave Ramsey has some really good stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, as an employer around here in Nashville, they don't necessarily have the best reputation, but he does have good, solid material.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is like, they tend to kind of lowball on price and things like that because yeah. he's a money guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, like, I get he's got to maintain that brand. It's just, but definitely check out his stuff, Financial Peace University. I know there's a little bit of a religious element there that some people find uncomfortable. You need to figure out how to sort, you know, filter that stuff out and just get good advice when it's good advice. Like, that's called being a grown up. That's something I hear as one of the biggest objections to what he says is that it comes out of Christianity. And it's like, I don't care if it comes out of Shinto. If it works, use it.
Exactly. Moving on to May, which fits perfectly in, start setting boundaries and enforcing them. When you set boundaries by default, they are implicitly at the other person's comfort level, not yours.
Because, you know, you have an interaction with somebody and you go, okay, how much crap am I going to put up with from this loser? You know, like, mm-hmm. I hate to put it that, or how much am I going to take and tolerate? You know, like, when you get into a situation where people feel comfortable insulting you and you're not, you know, making that stop, who's setting where the boundaries are? Well, it isn't you.
Exactly.
And you're probably not comfortable with it. So you have to kind of take that control back.
Poor boundaries waste time and attention, both from worry and direct disruption.
Yeah, because people with poor boundaries, they're happy to call you at work to complain about their problems.
Mm-hmm.
You and I both have several friends like that. They don't handle their stuff. And as a result, when something goes awry, yeah, they'll call you at 1 o'clock during a meeting repeatedly. you know, of course, now, you know, I know you've established better boundaries with some of them, and I have too. And it's exactly because of that. And the other thing is like, if you know things are starting to go kind of sideways for them because you've been watching on Facebook or something, you spend a lot of time dreading the phone call. Whereas if you'd enforce the boundary in the first place, somebody else gets that phone call. You can still be a good friend, mind you,
yeah,
and help somebody out. But if you remember, you know, you had problems a few years ago and, you know, I helped you out, but what I didn't do was get enmeshed.
That's true. Very true. Yeah. I have set a very firm boundary when it comes to recording this podcast.
Yeah.
Everyone in my life knows
that. Same here.
Monday nights, I record. Just before we started, I was texting someone I recently met. I was like, hey, about to walk into the recording studio. I can't take my phone in there, so I won't be able to talk for a while.
Yeah. And a lot of it's really just setting expectations. It's not, you know, people go, oh, you're trying to set boundaries. You know, you're being, you know, hard headed, or you're being, you know, a complete butthead to somebody else. It's like, no, I'm just saying that, hey, these are the things that are important in my life. I'm going to do them.
Yes. Poor boundaries make your life unpredictable.
Yeah.
Not in the good way. You know, it can destroy your ability to plan.
And, you know, I know you and I have both at different points in our lives had relationships with people, you know, friendships or, you know, dating relationships or whatever, or family relationships where the other party felt completely comfortable just throwing a curveball out there and wrecking everything and then sitting there and just grinning like, oh, I didn't do anything bad. I don't understand why you're so angry. And, you know, what happens? Well, you don't plan your life. You don't move towards your goals because all I'm going to do is put in all this effort to move towards my goal, and then they're going to jump in and screw it up.
Yes, exactly. And
honestly,
that's where this is coming from. I when I read the outline, I knew exactly where this was coming from and it's true, guys. It's something that Will and I have both dealt with.
And it's been good people that have done it.
Yeah, it's not like
they weren't toxic. Yeah. It's just you set an expectation that you're going to drop everything for what they want right then. And of course they went with the expectation. If they'd expected something different, they would have done that.
I will say this. It's a lot easier to set boundaries early than later. Because once a person can go so far, it's really hard to get them to rein it back because they're not...
Well, they're used to it.
Yeah.
It becomes a habit. You know, it's like finding some guy in a trailer and saying, you'll never win the lottery, versus finding the guy in the trailer that just won the lottery and taking the money from him. That doesn't go well, especially with some of my relatives. You know, that's just, you know, it's just human nature. And there's a ton of books on this. There's a bunch of boundaries books by John Townsend that get into this. There's one for marriage. There's one for, I think there's one for like dealing with your parents and stuff, or relatives that are, you know, that act up. I mean, you know, there's a pretty good chunk. I mean, this is a problem everybody has at some level. Mm-hmm. But start consciously enforcing that and going, I will not be treated this way. And I'm going to make my goals the focus of my life, not somebody else's.
And respect that in other people too.
Yes.
That's one of the things that I have seen some people do.
Well, it almost goes to the positive and negative rights thing, right?
Yeah.
Like it's a thing of, well, if I'm expecting you to give me money that you earned, like that's not a boundary. That's me being a looter. There's a difference between that and going, I expect you not to knock on my door at 1 o'clock in the morning just cause. You know, like there should be blood somewhere if you would knock on my door at 1 o'clock in the morning. Or you should show up with beer.
Duh.
Maybe both.
Yeah.
You know, like it should be a pretty severe situation and, you know, not just a rando thing because you don't respect time. You know, setting those expectations early is a really good idea. Plus, it tends to drive a lot of crazies away before you have to go to the next step, which is what we're suggesting for June, which is step away from negative, destructive people and relationships completely.
So you'll be the average of the 5 or 6 people that you hang out with most of your time. The behavior of those you hang out with and around will eventually seem normal. And if you can't enforce proper boundaries in a relationship, then it's toxic.
Or if, you know, if somebody doesn't allow you, that's how you know the relationship is toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is like when you're spending time with people that are toxic, you're not spending time with people that are uplifting. Yeah, because they're not going to be around that.
There's a difference between people who are going through a bad time.
Yeah, and people who are a bad time.
Yeah, I was like, having been through some pretty rough times the last few years.
Yeah,
you know, my life is turning up.
Yeah,
you know, it's back on track and it's starting to go into the positive.
Starting.
Okay, so it is going into the positive.
Yeah, it's well into the positive at this point.
But having been down there, I know that not everybody stays at the worst. Not everybody is there. And it's one thing to have someone, have a friend that is in need of help and is down on their luck or down, depressed, down and out, all of that, that has the potential to get better and you can see that in them.
Well, you have hope.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also the thing of, okay, this person has a potential to get better, but I can't help them. You know, if they're being toxic and they're destroying things in your life, at some point you got to look and go, you know, I'm not going to be in this situation. I mean, I've faced that fairly recently and it's not been pleasant.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a situation where it's like, yes, somebody can help this person. I can't.
There have been several times where I've had friends that I just had to stop being friends with.
And it's a thing of, you honestly end up cutting them off completely. It's not a thing of, okay, I'm going to keep some distance, because that's a boundary. But when it's like, it's a difference between a boundary and a wall. And, you know, at some point you do have to cut very, very toxic people out of your life. You know, and I think the notion that if it's a situation where you can't enforce boundaries properly, like somebody just periodically reaches into your life and wrecks everything because they feel like they can, you tell them to quit doing that and they continue doing it anyway, and you don't have a way to stop it within the relationship, then you need to get out of the relationship and just cut them off and say, we're done.
Romantic, friendship, whatever.
Yeah, especially romantic, because that's the one that you'll get hurt the worst. Mm-hmm. Except with the possible exception of close family. But yeah, you just start fixing that. Like, your life will get better when you do. And there's a lot of books on negative, destructive people. But I want to recommend, instead, if it, like, this is something you run into a lot, don't get a book. Get counseling. Because there's a reason you're putting up with this kind of behavior. And that it's one of those things where crazy comes in twos. If this thing is in your situation, or if this situation is in your life, it's there because you have strategies that are not working for you. It goes back to the old saying that there's not just one crazy person in a relationship. Like, I'm not necessarily saying crazy in the, oh, you know, this is bad sense, but you've got ineffective, broken coping mechanisms, and a book isn't going to fix that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that completely. So, July, improve your resume. It's interesting that you put this in July, because we recently aired the episode with Erin, and we talked with her about how she noticed, and I noticed, that looking for a job in July, August is really difficult because fewer places are actually hiring during the summer months.
Yeah, well, people don't quit their job when they got a vacation coming up either.
Yeah, and so this is a really good time to focus on your resume. You know, you don't want to be focusing on your resume when you're looking for a job. You want the resume to be ready to go when you're looking.
Because that's one less thing, especially if you get downsized. Mm-hmm. That's something that doesn't come up where you have to go, oh, no, you know, I just got downsized. Now I got to spend 4 days working on my resume and trying to dredge up contact info from my last 12 employers.
Yeah.
Like, that is a thoroughly unpleasant place to be, because even by the time you get that done, you've burned through all kinds of money. Mm-hmm. And opportunity, and, you know, you're tired and everything else. And, like, having that already in a row where it's like, okay, I got downsized and I'm sending my resume out as soon as I get home and starting the process. Like, that is so freeing.
You also need to be continually learning new things. And, you know, you might not be able to do this on the job. So it's your responsibility to improve your own knowledge and your career.
Yeah. And I am so tired of talking to developers who refuse to learn new stuff and go, oh, I'm only willing to do that on the clock. If somebody else pays for it, they pay for me to go to training. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, so you're going to shoot yourself in the foot on purpose because somebody else isn't putting the safety on for you.
Exactly.
Like, that is finger painting on paper plates stupid. I don't know, you know, as a grown adult, what the heck is wrong with somebody that does that? Like, that is a complete lack of maturity I spend some of my personal time training and building up my skill set because I know that at some point jobs end, all of them. And I want to be in a position where when the job ends, I can get another one because I like to eat. And as a responsible adult, I realize that this is my responsibility. It's great if the employer helps and they make it easier, but by default, it's going to get done, period. Like, yeah. This is something you have to take control of and get into a regular habit. I've got a friend that has got a schedule, and he watches one Pluralsight video. I think it's every 2 weeks, one of the training series on something. Even if it's not relevant to his job, he's like, oh, this looks interesting. I'll watch this 6 hours of training in 2 weeks. And that's really not that much.
Well, we had John Sonmez on. Didn't he say he watches like three a week or something?
Yeah, but let's be honest. John Sonmez makes a 6-hour episode in a week. That's the only way that he could have that much stuff come out.
So true.
Like, let's not use the exception as an example here.
But I will be honest. He has given me something to strive for because I like that. And, you know, this is something that as I've gotten a job and other things have picked up, my own training has kind of not completely dropped off, but
it tapers.
It's tapered. And that is appropriate that it not be as intense as it was when I was not working full time.
Right.
But I still think that I could do more. Back to January, I spend too much time watching TV. Because I'll be honest with you, after I've worked all day, usually a few extra hours if like we're trying to meet a deadline, my brain is a little fried, and sometimes I don't want to go watch a training video, or I don't want to practice. I want to go veg out. Well,
and I do the same thing. I've come home some days, and I'm just plumb illiterate. Like, there's nothing in the tank. Like, I can watch something, but it's going to be like a cow watching the thing. Like, it's not going to get absorbed. You know, I do take time on a Saturday, or if, you know, there's a weeknight and I'm, you know, not feeling just completely drained, I'll take some time for training and try to build up. But you got to get a handle on this. And the other thing too is get your resume out there and actually update it on LinkedIn, even if you're not looking for a job. And I actually do this every 3 months. I update it, which I need to do that again soon. I think it's scheduled for like December 3rd or something.
Yeah.
But I know I'm going to get carpet bombed by recruiters when that happens, because you get all these phone calls because people think, oh, you're updating your resume, you must be looking for a job. It's like, no, I'm doing maintenance. I don't change my smoke alarm batteries when there's a fire.
Well, I mean, I think I hit that critical amount of time this past month, because other than sort of maintenance calls and stuff from the recruiters that I had worked with before, I wasn't getting many. And then it's just the last couple of weeks, it's just been two or three a day.
That's the way of it. And I get how that makes you reluctant to update your resume. But the thing is, when you update it and you show what you've been doing, you also get a lot of useful information out of those phone calls. Because you get, hey, what are people actually looking for in the market? So that when you do get downsized, you already have those answers in place too. And you've probably already been tailoring your resume subconsciously for those things.
Well, yeah, it's like what we've talked about in previous episodes. When I was out looking for a job, one thing I kept getting asked about was Angular. And so I went and spent most of my studying learning Angular and was able to add that. And now I have a job where good portion of what I do is Angular. In August, start setting long-term goals. Figure out how to get there from where you are.
Yeah, and the big thing is I've noticed a lot of people, if you go, okay, what would you like to do? Where would you like to be 10 years from now? People don't have an answer for that.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you put this in August, because...
Well, it's the dog days of summer. You just got back from your vacation, right? So you have all the happy... Like, okay, yeah, it was really fun in Costa Rica, and I would really like to live there and be a beach bum someday. And like, that's a good time to get your goals. It's maximum sunlight. It's the best time of year for that, like at a hormonal level for figuring out the upside.
What amazes me is towards the end of August, my boss, the executive director, was planning our work retreat for late September, early October, and she gave us an assignment to write our personal and professional 1 and 5 year goals and bring them to the retreat.
Yeah. And, you know,
that, she gave us that assignment towards the end of August. And that's why I was like, that's kind of funny that you put this in August because that happened to me.
It's a good time.
Yeah.
For it. And, yeah. You know, the thing is people go, oh, well, you know, a 1-year plan, a 5-year plan. You know, I understand that all kinds of communist leaders failed at their 5-year plans, but individual people, that's a good way to go. Go, hey, what do I want to be doing 5 years from now? And how do I get there from here and start breaking it down and then actually start pursuing that?
Mm-hmm.
And get into kind of a regular habit. And this is really just a thought exercise, right? Like this isn't even necessarily that much of a habit. But the big thing is, you know, getting those goals down, that gives you a direction. So it's like, oh, I could take this job or this job. Well, which job is better? Well, you know, maybe they pay the same, maybe the commute's different, but hey, this one is going the direction I actually want to go, even though it pays less.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make a weighted decision based off of your goals versus just short term, you know, not really thinking things through.
Well, exactly. If you don't have a mission for your life, you need one.
Yeah.
And you know, your goals doesn't have to be charitable, but if you haven't at least thought
it has to be
realistic,
fulfilling.
Yeah.
And realistic.
Yeah. I say realistic. Yeah. If you've got some difficult goals that you want to accomplish, you need to get on that.
Yeah. And if you don't have some that are at least going to force you to grow and be difficult in that sense,
mm-hmm.
you probably need to think about it a little bit more because like you don't want to get to the end of your life and be like, oh, well, you know, I watched a lot of TV and I was always comfortable like that. That's not a growth spurt you want to have because it isn't one. And
more people regret not doing something than people who regret failing when they gave everything they had to do something.
Yeah. Get a handle on that and actually somewhat, you know, get into the process of thinking about your goals a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know, even, you know, once a month or twice a month, like sit down and actually do that and evaluate, am I headed in the right direction or not? And you'd be amazed at what it does for you. September, fix your environment.
Recycle.
Not really recycling. you know, like, I don't know. I've talked to a lot of people that will spend all kinds of money on expensive trips or they'll spend, you know, all kinds of money on various things. And then they sleep in a bed that hurts their back every night.
Yeah, don't get that.
Or they sit in a chair that hurts them. Or they, you know, they have bad lighting, you know, like in their, if you're working at home.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things. Like, fix that stuff. Just little stupid irritants. Like when you get a pile of enough little irritants, it's worse than a big one because you feel so much more helpless. Well, it's like the difference between being attacked by a bear and being attacked by a swarm of bees. You can shoot the bear.
You can shoot the swarm of bees.
Yeah, it's just not going to make any difference.
It's true.
Right.
But the what I was thinking when you were saying that is you got a lot of minor irritants, little things that bug you, annoy you, frustrate you.
Make you not do things.
Yeah. Well, that, and then you want to escape it, so you go on, you spend your money on a big vacation or something.
Yeah.
But you know what? The whole time you're on that vacation, you're thinking, 5 more days till I got to go back to that.
Yeah.
4 more days, you know?
And I mean, it's little stupid stuff. Like, you know, I have a workout room at my house,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, you've lived it in there.
Yeah.
And I've got a few more things I want to fix in there. Like, you know, I have the kettlebell sitting on the floor versus sitting on a rack. That bugs me. At a very slight level, that makes me not want to work out as much because I know I'm going to have to move this, you know, I'm going to have to move multiple hundred pounds of weight around just to get where I have an area to lift in. And that's annoying. If I get rid of that irritant, it's worth the cost because it will make me more likely to go in there and lift more often. It mm-hmm. just, it cuts the resistance. It's the same thing, you know, the reason I'm building a deck on the back of my house. It's like, I can take the dogs out the front door. It's not that big a deal, but it gets rid of the minor irritant because once I have a fence, that I can let the dogs out and I don't have to spend that time. And it just, it smooths your life out because there's a lot of things that happen where it's like, okay, this little irritant piled on to this other situation and made it unsustainable versus, okay, this little irritant wasn't there. And yes, there was another problem, but it wasn't as bad because there wasn't stuff piled on it. A lot of things are really, really simple to fix. You should like make a list of those and actually get them sorted out. Like you'll feel better.
Well, it's like you helped me move into my apartment and you even pointed out how the sunlight was going to be a problem where I wanted to put my desk.
Yep.
And so for Christmas, I will have gotten, at the time of recording, this Christmas has not happened yet, but I know what I'm getting, blackout curtains.
Yep.
That's what my mom, she asked me what I wanted for Christmas. I told her, and she's like, really? And when she came by the other day, I showed her, and she's like, oh, okay. So that's what she's getting me for Christmas. Or yeah. Will have gotten me.
Yeah.
Time shift.
Well, it's, yeah, the, but those little nuisances that you put up with, your life is not made better by doing that. It's mm-hmm. it's like going to sleep in a room where you know there's a mosquito buzzing around and periodically you hear it hit the wall. What do you end up doing? Half the time you're listening for the stupid bug. Whereas if you went and you just turned the light on and you took a fly swatter to it, then you go to sleep and you don't care. Now, it's not so great for the mosquito, but like get rid of little irritants. Like, you know, I actually make that part of your regular plan. It's really, it's quite nice. And, you know, the thing is, this doesn't cost money. Because a lot of times people are irritated just by the amount of junk that they have, just the property baggage essentially that people have. You know, our basements, we still have a pretty bad problem with clutter. It's not as bad as it was.
Well, I mean, you remember when you helped me move back up to Tennessee versus moving into my apartment?
Yeah,
I got rid of a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
of course, when I moved back up to Tennessee, I didn't get rid of anything in that move, and then was able to kind of sort through and get rid of a lot of things and. I still have still a bit of clutter in my apartment because I'm still unpacking things. But
yeah, I mean, stuff that's constantly in the way and you're like, I don't ever use this and I have to move it constantly. Like, that's a little irritant. Get it out of the way. I mean, it really, it's a lot better to do that. And there's actually a lot of good books on, you know, minimalism and decluttering and those kind of things, like how to think about that stuff. But I mean, it goes down to stuff like, you know, if you've got a closet full of shirts, put them in there in order. Just see how long stuff actually stays in there. Like if it's at the back and it stays in the back for 6 months, get rid of it. You're not going to wear it. And that's something you don't have to move. It's something you don't have to clean. It's something that's not taking up space. Like get things out of your life that are not working for you.
Of course, if you're like me, you've got a closet full of clothes that are just a little too small.
Well, yeah, if you're keeping it around for a motivator, that's a little different than it's passively there, right?
Yeah.
You're keeping it with a purpose. And this is what we're going back to on this whole episode is intentionality. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, I have this thing because it serves a purpose or it drives me to do something, not because, oh, hey, it's there.
So for October, start planning your day and your week. Get into the habit of planning your day before you start it. You know, and do the same thing at a higher level for your week, your month, your year. We had an entire episode just on this. This was one of our early episodes, really. But, you know, and keep track of whether your execution matched what your goal was for the day. You know, if not, that's a sign of something. Either bad execution or bad planning.
Yeah, because, I mean, if what you're doing doesn't match what you want to do, you either need to figure out, okay, I actually really wanted to do something else and I wasn't being honest with myself, or priorities changed, or I'm letting myself be distracted and I need to fix that. Like this is a very good feedback loop for getting a handle on that. The other thing that planning does is it gives you a point of reference for your priorities at a level that can help you make decisions. It also can help you look back and go, okay, you know, when I have some result, like let's say with the podcast, for instance, okay, let's say that we prioritized and planned marketing. Well, marketing doesn't hit immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Like whatever you do, like it's not an instant, oh, I flipped the switch and this thing happened. It's I flipped the switch and 6 months later something happened. So 6 months from now, when I have a spike, I can go, what was I doing that triggered this? And I can actually look back. And if I was involved in a marketing plan, that's totally what would happen. Thankfully, that's you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I get messages from Will all the time. He's like,
what happened?
We had a spike yesterday. What happened? I'm like, oh, well, this. It's like, oh.
Yeah. But the fact is that's, you know, that's your planning. That's kind of your bailiwick on this thing.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, that helps. And you can actually figure out what works, what didn't work. You have documentation. Is you think you can remember things, but you can't. Mm-hmm. Like once you're past 25, your memory goes to crap. And once you have a kid and a wife and a house payment and all these other things that are like in your brain space, you know, what you did with your Twitter marketing 6 months ago is not going to stay in your head.
Yeah. And another thing, I really like that you put this on here because I agree with this so much. You'll find that you get better at planning the more you do it. And this podcast is a pure example of that because the more we have done it, the better we have gotten at planning out our outlines, our show notes. We've gotten things down to where it's...
Well, I mean, when we started, we could come in here and we could try to record an episode, and it, like, we'd have like a 4-hour block, and it was pushing it to get that thing recorded. Now it's like, oh, hey, we have a 2-hour block and we goof off for an hour.
Exactly. You know, that's true. And that's...
We actually did find the goofing off for an hour can't really be cut because of other things, but we planned and we, you know, kind of, we got these feedback loops in place, and that's what you need to do with whatever you're doing.
Well, I'll say that what it is it's kind of a, the goof off hour is kind of a catch up hour. If we...
It keeps us from getting long winded on the podcast, because if you think it's bad now, just remember this is edited.
If we do something like we have an event on Saturday and then record on Monday, we may spend 15 minutes catching up.
Yeah.
Over what happened that day. But we just had the Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah.
And then a week before that. And we didn't record before that. And so...
It's been like 3 or 4 weeks,
hasn't it? Yeah. It's been several weeks since we recorded, and about 2 weeks since we've hung out. So we spent a good hour and a half before we started recording just catching up.
Yeah.
So getting into...
Well, I do want to throw something out there on the planning. My friend John Beluca, who you've met, he came and did talk at the .NET user group in Nashville. He's got a trick. He's got a spreadsheet, and for like each of his life projects, it's got a column, and he has the dates on the left. And what he does for, you know, and the dates are like at a week level.
Okay.
And then there's a column for each thing, and he has one task for the week in every project. That's every one of his personal projects. So he's always moving forward, and it's not like bonkers crazy. And, you know, he's amazingly effective with that. And it's a thing of he planned enough ahead of time and got that feedback loop going where it's like, okay, I planned and I said, I'm going to do these 15 things. Oh, I only got one thing done. And, you know, he hit that enough where he's like, okay, maybe I'll just plan on doing one thing and then just executing violently on that one thing and getting it knocked out. Yeah. And there we are. And he actually came out with a way of working out his plans where it works a whole lot better. And now that's something he doesn't have to worry about because he's got the regular habit of, I'm going to open up the spreadsheet, put the things in, I'm done with my planning for the week. So he like meta planned and it works.
That's nice. I like that. I like that a lot. So moving on to November, implement maintenance schedules for everything and stick with it. This kind of follows what you just said.
Yeah. You got a lot of stuff that recurs in your life. Like, you know, it's stupid stuff like changing the smoke alarm batteries, changing the air filters, taking your car in for maintenance, going to the dentist, going to the doctor for your, you know, yearly checkup, you know, the various different, you know, stuff like updating Windows before it hits you in the middle of a podcast recording. Yeah, I know that used to be a thing you could do and now you can't. But, you know, like get those things in a regular schedule where you can see it coming in your calendar that it needs to happen. And that way it's not like, oh, yeah, hey, I need to take my car in because it turns out I've run 10,000 miles on this last oil change. Like, that's not a good place to be. That's how you have real problems and expensive problems. It's just like not getting regular recurring stuff out of the way where you're not having to think about it. Like, that will free up so much mental space for you. Like, we have electronic devices, okay? Like, literally, since the time of stone tablets, we've been able to write stuff down one way or another. That makes things easier. That's why we do it. So get that stuff out of your head. Don't like carry that with you. There's no point in it. You're not gaining anything from it, and you're losing mental capacity that you can keep for other things. Because what happens? Oh, you're coding. Oh, I need to change the oil. I completely forgot about that crap. What do? I got to call them, and I got to, like, if you knew that was coming before, you could do it at an optimal time instead of at the worst time.
Yeah.
Which is typically going to be when you're neck deep in something and your brain is rebelling, going, I want to get out of this.
Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense. So finally, December. Set up a process for collecting and organizing your ideas. If you're doing or intend to do anything creative, your ideas will be extremely valuable to you.
And you don't want to lose them.
Yeah.
Because that's the worst thing. It's like, oh, I had this great idea the other day. What was it? I remember sitting up in bed. Because you'll remember the context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, I was sitting up in bed and I didn't write it down because I thought I'd remember it. What was that about?
I hate that. Because I can remember like all these weird details.
Yeah.
About, like, you know, what color on the wall.
Exactly where the ray of sunlight hit the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's never anything relevant. You remember the situation, and that's, like, the worst feeling in the world. That's why I have paper and pencils scattered at strategic locations around the house. I have apps on all my devices for keeping track of things. I used to use Evernote for this because it was great. You know, I get on my phone and then Evernote started, they started kind of getting their app started trying to do too many things. And
I just use Notepad on my phone.
A text editor and Dropbox.
That's all you need.
The electronic side of it. And just like for capturing notes. Now for organizing them, that's a little different. I'm looking into some other options. I'm looking at Cherry Tree and some of those kind of things. But
that's not how you organize them. That's how you get them when they come to you. If you have a smartphone, a lot of times I'll have ideas when I'm driving down the road and I can take notes
verbally.
Yeah. And then write them down later.
Or you can use voice dictation.
Yeah.
I've done that as well. And it works like a champ. But you need to have a system in place so that wherever you are, you can jot ideas down within reason. Obviously, mm-hmm. you can't in the shower so well. Although, you know, you can get little magnetic deals that will hook onto the wall and like a little whiteboard in the shower. But there's a point where that's a little too nerdy.
The thing is, I can remember it long enough to get out of the shower and dry off. Like if I have an idea and I'm like, I need to remember this, I can remember it long enough for that. It's two days later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, come up with a way of capturing ideas when you have them. Because you don't know when the next, product idea will come up. I mean, I've had probably 10 or 12 different instances where I've come up with a product idea. I'm like, oh, that'd be a really good idea. And I didn't write it down. And then other people implemented it.
Yeah.
And built amazing, successful businesses off of it. It's like, I could have beaten them by 5 years to their market. Now, granted, part of that's execution, right? You still have to do it. But it's like, I didn't keep the idea. And I remembered it years later. I'm like, oh yeah, that's the thing I was thinking about. Yeah, that doesn't help then. So get in the habit of collecting ideas when they come to you and getting them somewhere where they don't go away. And also keep it organized where when you're trying to brainstorm, trying to figure out what that idea was, you can go, oh, that was last Tuesday. And because you're going to remember all the irrelevant details. It was at 9:31 p.m. My neighbor was, playing Sweet Home Alabama 4 doors down in their car with their window cracked down. And it was an 87, Chevy or something, you can remember all those stupid details. And those will be enough to actually get the idea out. And this is probably one of the biggest things that has improved my life over the last, 8 or 10 years, as far as managing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is collecting ideas when I get them and holding on to them.
Well, some of the best episode ideas that I've had have come
driving down the road.
Yeah. Usually I'm driving and I'm thinking about stuff and I'm like, ooh, this would make a really great episode. And so I'll just record episode about this and then I'll look at them. Well, that's the big thing. Look at them later.
Yeah.
'Cause it's one thing to write them down and then never look at them again, but look at it later and go, I remember that.
Well, and that's something to do in your monthly planning or yearly planning is just go back through your ideas and just go, hey, let's look, what's this? Ooh, and just see. Plus it's almost like a little diary mm-hmm. of, where your headspace was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's well worth it. And it's really something I think everybody should do.
Well, that pretty much wraps us up. Obviously we hit December. So, before we close everything out, Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
Well, I want to kind of reiterate something that was, I guess, a subtext to this whole thing. And that is the idea of being intentional about the things that you do. We really go through a lot of our lives doing things because we're supposed to do them or because it's a habit. I think that that's probably a pretty terrible way to do things. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that a lot of the things that we have programmed ourselves to do are not really for our benefit. They tend to be for other people's benefit or other people's comfort, just trying to avoid problems that are, minor irritants and, ending up with major ones. And so I want to challenge everybody to, when you're doing something, to think about why you're doing it and to actually evaluate whether this thing is bringing you joy, whether it's bringing you peace, whether it's making your life better, or whether it's something that you're just doing because that's what you do. And that's really the goal here with this whole thing is start to shift your life from a life where stuff happens to you to where you make stuff happen on purpose. And that's all I got.
Stand by for Titanfall.
If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at CompleteDeveloperPodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with the news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.